chance about it.
Accession number 19067, Reel 6.
Fred McLeod, Reel 6.
Now, we was... we was ordered, we went out with four mules.
Excuse me, you were telling me about this chap, this Lancashire
yes.
and Bolton.
Yes, yes, Jimmy Golden, he was one of the gun team. I don't know whether you know, but this is quite true. We have a number one, a number two, a number three, and a rangefinder. And he, as a Baden-Stroud, can take up to 20,000 yards range, which nobody's tried to fire at 20,000. And it's a 3-inch mortar. We had two ammunition mules, and I was carrying six bombs each, and there was 10-pound bombs. So each mule was carrying 60 pound, and 60 pounds a lot of bloody weight when in hot weather. The other mule, it carried the barrel of the 3-inch mortar. The third mule, it carried the base plate, and the fourth mule, it carried the barrel, and that was it. So we had four mules, we led one, and we traced one. And I don't know whether we ever traced a mule or seen a mule that's been traced, but you lead the first mule, you trace the second mule, and you hang on to the tail of the first mule. And that's it. We was on our way to... we'd passed Tweeser. We was going on to this other place. It'll come to me what they call it. And... We could hear this wearing noise, so we decided that we'd unship the mules, and if anybody in the infantry that knows about 3-inch mortars, it's bloody murder, because it becomes what they call a long carry. You have 30 pound of bombs in this hand. That's 3 10-pound bombs, 3 pound, the same in the right hand. One chap has the barrel, another one has the base plate, and the other one has the bipod, and that's it. So you'll be coming with the mules, and the chap stays with the mules. And the reason for that was it had to be absolutely as noiseless as you could make it. Was frightened the mules, they'd start eoing and braying like they did, so they had to stop behind. Anyhow, we was going along this track, and all of a sudden there's one shot goes, there's a shot goes, bang. Of course, we're all down on the track. We stayed there for about 10 minutes. And the corporal that was in charge of us, he said, I'm going to withdraw about 200 or 300 yards. We'll see what's happening. Anyhow, we withdrew, and our drill was, like I said, there was about, with this section of riflemen that was with us, there was, the four in the gun with the 3-inch mortars. Our drill was the even numbers, 1, 3, 5, 7, went off to the left-hand side of the track. and the even numbers went off to the right-hand side. So you could take up an immediate defensive position. When we got back our 200 yards, with a man missing, and I've told my wife, it was a constant worry, always in my mind, like this chap Cooper. They called him Jimmy Golding. Like I've just said, bit of a Bible basher, but he was a marvellous man. And I said to my missus, I don't know what's happened to that chap. He was the only man that was missing, and he was missing all the war years. I joined Burma Star Association, and all of a sudden, I spotted it. Now, this chap had been up to Carlisle. True as God's mad judge, it was there, I didn't write it. And he edited his memoirs Through Cloud and Sunshine. Shouted to her, he's alive. It gets me, does that, about that lad. The shot, when it rang out, he'd been shot through. He'd been shot through his left eye, I think it was, because it was the forward chap. He'd been shot through his left eye, and it had come out the back of his eardrum. It's quite true. I'll find it for you. You can read it. We couldn't find him, we went back, we couldn't find him. All we could find was blood on the track. We got to know what we wanted to know, and the corporal in charge of the section, he says, come on, we've got to know what we want. He says, I hate having to go back a man short. What we'd spotted is where in sound was the Japanese, whether they were Japanese IRAs or whatever there was, but they had this large, it was bigger than a Meritilla digger. Was it bigger, maybe up to about half a ton, and it was digging about 18-inch wide strips. And they was widening the track so that they could come through with their light tanks or transport, whatever it was. So that was it. We withdrew and we went back. And
so this was a recce patrol, was it?
Yeah. Well, you see, you either get a recce patrol, but we went out as a tiger patrol. And I don't mean we went out hunting tigers or out like that, but a tiger patrol can be any number of men, from, say, 5, 10, 15, platoon, battalion, just depends whatever frontage they want, the tiger patrol. We went back and we had reported that we'd lost Jimmy Golding, and Our CO, I can't remember what they call him, but he said, right. He said, well, they had an O group meeting, that's all officers and whatnot, what's going. And we was going to pull out, we was going to pull the battalion out at daybreak the next morning. And I think they called it Lieutenant Colonel Cotterill, I think, our brigade, or our battalion commander. And he said, no, sod this, as we're while morning, we'll bloody pull out as soon as it got dark, and it did. We set off from Kennedy Peak. And we came down to we came down to Tidham. We hit the Japs just at the other side of Tidham. We cleared the road, we cleared them out, drove them over the hillside. And we carried on till daybreak. Now, when that, like I said, when we went up that road, you could only get a jeep up. But when we come down that road, and I'm talking about a collective area of town, which was it run up to about 10 or 11 months. We'd had one Christmas in Burma, and I'd like to tell you later what we had for Christmas dinner on Christmas Day, and that was the Christmas of 1942, because this 9 or 11 months, this is what had elapsed. And we're heading towards the Christmas of the end of 1943. That's right, 1943. And this road, this is the actual facts. From being at Tidham Track, you could run the Americans. The Americans was just coming into Burma at that time. And they had these TCLs, what they call troop carrying lorries. And they also carry a platoon, fully equipped American doughboys or whatever their ranks was. But they would be nearly 9 feet wide. There was wider than the widest lorry in I think ours is about 8 foot, even now buses are about 8 foot wide. But these, there was a special lorry, these American TCLs. And the reason for that was there was more mechanised than what we was. And you could run three of them side by side down the road, that's how wide it was. Because once they'd been able to get the jeeps down, then they started these bulldozers. And would it been it was like earth and pebbles of road, and naturally they were sorting the wheat from the chaff, and the hard stuff was going on the top, and the soil and whatnot were just shoving it over the hillside, and no good, so soft. And it was from then that our hard work really started. From what we'd come through, Imphal, Coima on the other side, they took a right bashing. I forget who was at Coima. There was another two ill features. One was called Blackbird and Peacock, and there was like at the distance they did resemble a bird, and more so on the night time as the light was going. We shifted them out of there. We come to it was like an horseshoe bend, and I'll never forget. This is another thing I'll never forget. The courage of some of these chaps are absolutely wonderful. There was a chap, he stood out in the open, and there's the road, it goes like an horseshoe, and he was stood on this buffer gun in his fire. It was firing over open sights, in full view of the chaps, the enemy, about three quarters of a mile away. Quite true. A buffer, it's loaded with four shells at a time in a clip, and there's only one way it can hear you say cease firing. his ankle, they have a rope round it, and they don't shout ceasefire, they just pull his foot off the firing pin, because he's absolutely deaf, and boom, 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 and another clipping, boom, 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 like that, and the firing of our open sights, and we had to go round the back of the horseshoe, like that, and naturally, they shifted him off there, and shifted the Japanese off that corner, and we went down to Bishampere. Opposite Bishampere was this OP Hill, and this is where Major Cooper copped it. On the afternoon, Struers got to my judge. I was a forward scout. I was going down this hillside, and the two hills met at the bottom, just like a V. And I was going along, and all of a sudden this machine gun opened up, and down bang, I'm down on the floor. And I should say that about 6 or 7 inches above my head, I can hear the grass cracking and dropping on the back of my neck. And it says these rounds of bullets, and it stopped firing. And I turned my head on one side, and I tried to squeeze myself into the floor. You know, nobody wants being shot, and nobody's all that brave that they know when they are being bloody shot. And all of a sudden, to my amazement, to this very second as I'm saying this, I heard a voice, and he said, "Oh, give us a hand, lad. Give us a hand, lad." And I let my head come up like that, and I looked across, and I saw him. I recognised his voice. I recognised his voice from Cockermouth. And
whose voice?
Pardon?
Whose voice was it?
It was the Sergeant Major of B Company. He said, "Give us hand, lad. Give us hand, lad." And I thought, what the hell are you doing? You know you've been fired at. You've been shot. Somebody up there with a bloody machine gun. So I put my rifle over my shoulder, I shouldered it like that, and I spotted him, and he was about, I should say, 15, 20 yards away. And I'll never forget, his eyes seemed the colour of that blue. And I knew who it was, and straight away I thought, well, sod it, if I get it. And I run to him, and I dropped down. I took his rifle, and I put his rifle over top of my rifle, slung it like that. I lifted him up, and I said, "Come on, Bob." And I can't remember, his name will come to me, but he was a Sergeant Major of B Company. And it's marvellous. I've often wondered to this day where I got my strength from. I was on my knees, and he's on his back, and he's saying, "Oh, my left leg, oh, my left leg." Where I got my strength from, I don't know. But I picked him up bodily like that, and I started trotting down the bloody hill with him. And as I went down the hill, I got within about, maybe 30 yards. And I saw a chap come walking up and by. He was a great chap. He was from Hull, and they called him Sam McGlone. Sammy McGlone. And he said, "What's Merrimack?" I said, "Here." And with that, I went flying. I caught me foot in a tree root or something like that, and I did a bloody swallow dive with him. I'll always remember. on the floor, and it was crying on my left leg, on my left leg. And there was a stretcher bearer. I'm shouting for the stretcher bearer, and they called him Mutter's Head. And he was a Cumbrian, and he was a stretcher bearer. And I put him down. And there was this Sam McGlone that there was moving up. There was Captain Blamire. He came up and he took his took one of his dog tags off him, because he always had two in the infantry, a red one and a green one, a round one and an oblong one. And he says, "Well," he says, "it's no use hanging about here." I said, "So that was when we went up on top of OP Hill, and that was when that attack come in that night, and we brought Major Cooper out when the Japs come in." And I think
your memories of Major Cooper being wounded?
Yes, these two mules that we had, one was Lucky and the other one was Churchill. And we hadn't called them that. When they came up, when we signed for them, they said, "That one's Lucky and that one's Churchill. So I said, "How Lucky?" Just like that. Because when I looked at this mule, Lucky, quite true. It was a warlord mule. That means his face was mottled at one side, and his eye matched it. And the other one, I'm looking at him now. It was brown. The other one was like mottled. It was he wasn't as strong as a mule. He was as strong as a bloody elephant. He was great. Them two mules that night that he got wounded, Major Cooper, when the Japs come in, they run and took the hobble off them, because they used to hobble them on a chain and an iron, knock it in, and we let them go. And I was on top of the what they call me. I was on top of the laid on the side of the command post, and there was this chap, Pete McManus. He was at the other side. The Japs came in and there was bloody screaming and throwing grenades and this, that, and the other. You do funny things. I can remember this. I will do to my dying bloody second. They started throwing these grenades, and all of a sudden this one that come in exploded, Nick Cooper. Manus grabbed him by the leg and he said, "Get down, you bloody fool." And like I say, you do these things and you don't know you've done them until you've done it. I jumped up and I reversed my rifle, and like I tried to hit it like it's in a bloody cricket ball. I could see it coming. Of course, I missed it. And bang, it went in the command post. And that was it. That was when Cooper got it. So we pulled one out, Captain Blamire. There was Captain Blamire, there was Ray Cooper. I think there was the rangefinder, I can't remember what he was, what they called him. But there was them three in the what they called them. Captain Blamire, he was badly wounded. He got the base plug of the grenade in his chest. We grabbed hold of him, and me and Pete, we run back to the wire. We popped him through the wire and kicked him up in the arse and said, "Get down to the road." And he did, though, he went. And then we goes back to the command post, and we fished Cooper out. He jumped at one side, I jumped at the other side, and the third man on the top, and we. This is what I say. He must have been, I should say, between 13. His physique, if he's changed like that, I can't visualise it. because I've seen him stripped, swimming in that pool in Fort William, and it was perfect. It was like that down, I should say 5 foot, 10, 11, 6 foot. And he couldn't get out, and I couldn't bloody get him out. But between us, we dragged him out like that, and we got on the top, pulled him out. And like I said, with a rifle at one side of him, and a rifle at the other side of him, and we half pulled him, got him down to the road. When we got him down to the road, he turned round to me, and this is why I'll never forget that man in all my life. Like I've said, I've never seen him since, never heard of him since. But when we was at the bottom, it was just beginning to get light, and there was this group of men. Didn't know whether it was Japanese, Chinese, whatever there was. But he turned round to me, and if that's the Bible, he said to me, go and contact them men. See if they can get us, see who they are, see if he can get us some help, and get me down to the road. Now then, that's the honest gospel truth. When I went, I got within about 50 yards, and I shouted to them, who are you? Just like that. And the answer I got was to this guy in second. And who are you? And that was when I said, B Company, Border Regiment. This chap came across, and I don't know his rank, but nearly all officers in with the Gurkhas. There was always white officers. And he just turned round to me and he said, by hell, he says, you've been having some fun and games last night, haven't you? He said, we've been on the hillside listening to it going on. And that was it. And he turned out, they made him this temporary stretcher for Cooper, and they put him on. Blamey was still there, and he was walking wounded in his chest, this place. Cooper turned round to me, because Pete McManus said to me, he said, well, by hell, he said, I can't believe it. Can't bloody believe it, he said. The order that we got from Major Cooper was, take up a defensive position, facing up the hill. We're going back. And he left us there. Now that's the only gospel truth that I come face to face with God. I know what he'll say to me, and I hope I do go to heaven. I do. Because I know what God will say to me. He'll say, Fred, that day you did bloody marvellous. I know what he'll say, because it brought him out, what they call him, Bob Little. Sergeant Major Bob Little. That's what they called him. Now this chap, 2 days after, Sammy McGlone, he said, Bob, I said to me, Mac, Bob Little's dad. And I thought, oh Christ almighty, you risk your life. I mean, like I said, I took a swing at that bloody grenade with the bloody rifle butt. Pete Mac